Hello and welcome back to Unusual Sources. This is AFMU 93.3. This is Peter Leibovich along with Brendan Stone. And on the line we have an old friend of the show, Phil Taylor. Phil, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
Not bad. And to remind our listeners, you can hear Phil Taylor on CIUT at 5 o'clock on Mondays between 5 and 6. That's at 89.5. And you could hear his programs or read some of his commentary on taylor-report.com, right?
Bingo. Got it.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Phil, you have some good news about a speaker, very prominent, one of the most prominent American black literary figures in in modern time. You have some news about him.
Yes, it's Ishmael Reed. He won many prizes for his poetry, his plays, his essays. He is a central figure in African American, but also just plain American literature. He's lives in the Bay Area. He's from Buffalo, by the way, born in Tennessee, but from Buffalo. And he's going to be at the Steelworker Hall, USW, 25 Cecil Street.
That's a Steelworker Hall in Toronto, because
Toronto, yes,
yeah,
for your listeners, yes. Oh, you guys have a hall too.
Yeah.
All right, I didn't know. I thought there was only one.
Yeah, right.
All right, 25 Cecil in Toronto, which is off St. George. It's 7:30 p.m. on April the 16th. And Ishmael Reed has a new book published by Baraka Books called, I don't have it in my hand, but it's Barack Obama and the Media. And Ishmael is someone who he follows very closely the American media scene and notices the racial biases and flat-out racism that often infects commentary, and as his essays in this book are focused on that and such matters. I got it now. Barack Obama and the Jim Crow Media. Pardon me, the Jim Crow Media. Ishmael Reed. It's Baraka Books in Montreal, and I really recommend people get a copy. But it's a great opportunity to see Ishmael Reed. Talk and answer questions, and should be a very interesting evening. So it's April 16th, 7:30 p.m. at 25 Cecil Street in Toronto, Steelworkers Hall.
And for those people who are not familiar with Ishmael Reed, he does a lot of writing for Counterpunch. I mean, if you go to
Find him in Counterpunch, and he's been the center of prominent story in America, the argument around the movie Precious, and Ishmael Reed, and as have some other members of the black intelligentsia in the U.S. have criticized that film as being riddled with the worst stereotypes and having been promoted by producers and others who are directing it. This, I think, is a central part of his argument. It's directed at a white audience. And we're all, I think, familiar with this. We, of course, experience a lot of racism in Canada. There is this issue of when someone says welfare, the photograph of a black person is put up. If they say drugs, photograph of a black person is put up. And they say guns, a photograph of a black person. And this is really what Ishmael is getting at. Actually, the film, at the core of the film, Precious, involves an episode which everybody mentions within 5 minutes of talking about that film. It's about a man who has raped his daughter.
With the help
of course,
her.
It's a black man, black daughter. And as Ishmael says, we really don't need this being thrown at us one more time, because the actual people say, well, it's so true, and there's a woman, Oprah, who says, we have to face these things. Well, I suppose so, but why isn't the film about a white person? Because there is the incidence of incest and rape is as common in the broader community as it is in the black community. So, and same with drugs. But it's turned into a racial matter, and it becomes a way to patronize and hector the black population. So Ishmael is a very brave man. He took it on, and he's gotten a lot of heat for it. He was on the program Q, CBC, where there was someone from the Toronto Film Festival.
Yeah, Carmen Bailey, I think, is his name.
Yeah, it had debated him a little bit. It wasn't much of a debate because Ishmael knew an awful lot more about the subject than Cameron Bailey. Probably, I would say, the topic will probably come up when he's in Toronto on April the 16th at 7:30 at 25 Cecil Street. I would imagine that will be probably the first or second question anybody will ask.
Well, and he became well-known in his book Reckless Eyeballing, right, where he takes on the same question of...
Yes.
If they haven't read that book, they should read that book, too.
That's a great novel. It's based on the episode, the real murder of Emmett Till in Mississippi, I think it was. And Emmett Till was a young man from Chicago who had gone to visit his relatives and was passing by a store and on a dare... whistled at a woman in the store, and so the Klan came and beat him to death. And members of his family had to flee for their lives, even, you know, survivors of that incident. And it became one of the most dramatic stories in the struggle against racism in America, because the mother, when the body was returned to Chicago, they told her there was going to be closed casket. And she said, no, I want people to see what they did to my son. So more than 100,000 people passed by that casket. And it really triggered a militancy and a political struggle, which was another. He was a martyr, if you have to say, Emmett Till inspired people. Now, but along came an American feminist writer who said in an essay that Emmett Till was just like the men who killed him, in that they were all male chauvinists, did not respect women. And so Ishmael Reed wrote a book, a novel, in which he has that argument. He deals with that. And I've in a very clear, bitter way. And so he said, Emmett Till, you see, was guilty of reckless eyeballing.
So this is...
an important novel, an important writer. I mean, I'm most anxious to see him. You know, there's a new book, which I think I hope everybody's talking about in Hamilton, as we are here elsewhere. There's an African-American woman has written a book called The History of White People.
Well, yeah, I saw her on the Colbert show.
Escapes me. Yeah, she was on Stephen Colbert, and she's really taken on, I mean, she discusses how we get our racial notions about who's black, who's white, who isn't, you know, the various other categories. She points out that the Irish in America on the East Coast weren't always white. They were because one group of them arrived at a particular historical moment. They were so put upon and looked down and taken advantage of that they weren't categorized as white. Later, they made the cut and they decided, okay, they're white. But she points out this has to do with class, culture, various things. There are little tests unspoken that put you in one category or the other. I'm saying all this in the absence of having, I haven't yet got on the book. But again, I think Ishmael Reed is going to find this very interesting. He has an essay, very tongue-in-cheek, titled Black Irish, which is a whole topic. But he points out he's Ishmael Reed. He is part Irish. But he decided to attend a St. Patrick's lecture as an Irishman, which other people in the meeting had a little trouble getting used to that idea. So anyhow, it just shows Ishmael Reed is right at the center of the most important debates in American culture, and he's got. By the way, he's a musician. He writes songs. A good number of them have been performed by Taj Mahal. So he's quite a talented guy.
So we should remind people, Yende, he's going to be on April 16th.
April the 16th.
25 Cecil Street.
It's a Friday night. It's 7. Actually, I said, it's 7 or 7:30. Better be there at 7.
And that's at 25 Cecil Street in Toronto, which is near the corner, near Spadina and College.
Yeah, between Spadina and St. George, right?
Spadina and, well, Belvedere on that side.
Oh, it becomes Belvedere.
Yeah. Okay.
Good.
Yes. Or Belvedere or Beverly, I can't remember. But it's 25 Cecil. You can Google it at 25 Cecil Street,
yep.
Toronto, Ontario.
And it's one of the sponsors, a different book list, if you can say, different book list dot, I think it's .com or CA, you'll go, there is an announcement posted there.
And a different book list is the store where you can get Ishmael Reed's books.
Yeah, they feature African-American, African-Canadian literature. It's a very nice store. It's got everything.
Yes.
Including this latest. And it's Baraka Books. We're really selling this stuff, I think. We're doing it. We're covering this ground. This is good.
How do you spell Baraka Books, just for people, if they want to Google it?
B-A-R-A-K-A. Piece of cake.
It's just like Barack with an A at the end.
Yep. Oh.
By the way, it comes from the word blessing, right?
Huh?
The word is blessing. Barak. Arabic for blessing.
Yes. Baraka is a pretty popular name. There's an American poet who was a close friend, peer of Ishmael Reed, is Amiri Baraka, once known as Leroy Jones. And
yes.
Ishmael has talked about him. Amiri Baraka, by the way, has been here. He's joined the fight against, there's a man named Carlos Moore who's going around bad-mouthing Cuba and trying to enlist black Americans in a denunciation. He's got a petition against Cuba. So Amiri Baraka and others who are quite knowledgeable on the matter have exposed him pretty good, done an excellent job. I recommend people look into this. It's another one of those things where the U.S. Hires people to try to undermine the Cuban government.
Yes. Talking about it was another issue that has come across, and I know you talked to some people in Quebec, but the Quebec provincial government all of a sudden decided to make what 20 or 30 women in all of Quebec wear a veil? But they're going to make...
You know, I did some research. It's eight, I think.
Eight. So there's a book called The Seven Veils, right? So now the eight veils.
Yes. The Quebec Eight.
The Quebec Eight. And they're going to pass a special law.
Yes.
To stop them from wearing that veil if they go...
Under certain conditions. They wear it on the street. Although, I mean, as we all know, you start this stuff and people will become vigilantes. It's dangerous.
Yes.
There are certain services that will not be available to them if they don't remove this. It's called the niqab, and a complete veil with a view for the eyes. It reflects a particular culture in a particular part of the world, and it is a shock that this is going on. But my opinion is that that the liberals and who are bringing this in is charade, but the PQ went along. Is that they're trying to emulate what they think is the French model, and if you always want to remember, if you talk about Quebec, you must kind of keep your eye on France, because the intelligentsia and other institutions of Quebec follow very closely what's going on in France. France has had this thing of struggle against what they call clergy, but they obviously distorted it, the French themselves, because they say, we're against any display of religious affiliation, but it's not really true. They're looking for Muslims. The treatment is not the same. And just as was pointed out in the Toronto Star by Mr. Siddiqui, in the Quebec National Assembly, they have a huge crucifix. And what's that doing there? And by the way, it was put there by Duplessis, who was, everybody agrees, was a right-wing semi-fascist in his view of the world. He probably liked Mussolini, et cetera. But anyhow, when they say, we're concerned about, you know, religious symbols, well, they're not really concerned. You know, they got the crucifix there.
Well, Duplessis comes from a day that when you disagreed with him, you were anti-Christ.
Mm-hmm. There's a detail I should mention, the Bloc Québécois, which is their federal representation from Quebec. We all know the name, Duceppe. The Bloc is opposed to this. They differ with the PQ, which is really quite interesting. They say it is wrong-headed, they don't take that position. So it's a regrettable development. We'll see where it goes next. But that's some of the bare facts that people need to know about it.
And also the women's movement and progressives in Quebec are not supporting this law.
That's right. The Quebec Women's Organization, which is very large, by the way. Quebec tends to be, whatever it is, anti-war, women, labor, they're always larger. At any rate, there's a dynamic women's movement. They studied the matter. They discussed it at great length. They produced pamphlets and whatnot, and they don't agree with this policy. This seems to be, as I say again, driven by, at the end of the day, by bigoted attitudes, actually. I don't see how else you can characterize it.
Well,
women, and they have to have a law?
Yes. It seems like a remarkable amount of attention for eight women. And it is pretty obvious that it's interesting in terms of you know, how you deal with different cultures, different religions in a secular, democratic, tolerant society. People tend, if you treat people with respect and respect their opinions, they'll come to their own conclusions on what they want to wear and how much they want to pray and everything else. I mean, that's up to each individual.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start telling people you're not allowed to do something, then all of a sudden it becomes a symbol of...
A symbol of resistance.
Of resistance.
Yes. No, that's where they are, and incidentally, France is, you know, this has been a nightmare for them. When they were fighting, when Algeria was fighting for its independence, supported, by the way, strongly by the people who may have founded the PQ,
René Lévesque, yes.
Strong support of the Algerians. Well, there were Algerians working for France, and when the Algerian Revolution was successful, they came to France to be, you know, Frenchmen. But they found out that the French regarded them as Algerians. Now, their children are wearing a hijab and practicing Islam, and they can't figure it out. But of course they are, because they don't appreciate being put down lectured to by... people who regard themselves as superior.
And that's one thing. And the other thing, too, is that if you're familiar with and you actually, you know, talk to your neighbor and see how they live, you will find that many women that from Muslim backgrounds that wear headscarves or whatever are university-educated professionals, are independent in terms of, you know, they have their own voices, and they're not cowering in a corner, completely out of society. In fact, they're integrated in society.
Yes.
And so it's, even the stereotype is wrong. Yeah. I mean, stereotyping people, because it's not any different than religious people of any religion, yeah, who are fully integrated into the rest of society. You can, mm-hmm, you know, there is room for that.
Yeah. No, this is just, well, of course, it's also part of the greater mania of anti-Islam. What we now call it Islamophobia.
Islamophobia, yes.
Which, by the way, Islamophobia is okay and permitted and expected here. But I noticed that today's New York Times is talking about Muslims. They suspect Muslims from Chechnya who may have been involved in blowing up the setting off a bomb in a Moscow subway. And the editorial of the New York Times says, that isn't Muslim extremism. That's a result of the way the Russians treat the Chechens. You say, oh, that's odd. Because when it comes from the Middle East and is directed at Canada and U.S., we say, well, that's just extremists.
Yes.
I mean, nothing to do with us, right? We didn't have anything to do with stirring up bad blood there. No, of course not.
I got to tell you, I read an editorial yesterday in the National Post that made my blood curdle, and you know, even for the National Post, it went beyond their normal extremes. It basically said that it's too bad that terrorism happened in Russia, but the Russians don't want to put sanctions on the Iranians, so therefore, you know, they're kind of getting what they deserved.
Yeah, and when you read that, by the way, you have to say to yourself, if that would be the thinking in U.S. intelligence circles, you'd have to ask, did you, by any chance, have a hand in that?
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is, no doubt, U.S. policymakers and diplomats will be saying to Russia, you see, we have a common problem. And the headquarters for our common problem is Tehran. Even though, by the way, none of the people involved are friends of Tehran.
No.
But what the heck?
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to be logical or factual. It just has to be.
No. As long as you can mention Muslims and us getting together against Iran in the same sentence, it's all supposed to work out. But it is. You can just see it. And every editorial writer, by the way, because they all work for the same gang. I mean, they will all, whether it's the Star or the Globe or the New York Times, and you just mentioned National Post, they're going to say, oh, see, the Russians caused that.
Yeah.
It's their own, because they're too tolerant of those guys. Or they don't understand who they are, or, you know, but they cause it. But we didn't cause anything ourselves. When something happened here, we didn't cause that.
No, and by the way, and it's an agreement between, and it's interesting, and we should comment on that. We had Eve Engler on before you, but we're talking about sort of liberal position on the Middle East and the conservative position. But, I mean, it goes to another point. I mean, Hillary Clinton just trying to tie all her points together. I don't know if we can do that. But Hillary Clinton comes to Canada and, you know, and puts these two positions to the Canadian people and to the Canadian government. One, she criticizes the Canadian government for wanting to restrict women to get abortion in maternal postnatal care or prenatal care. And then she lectures us about staying in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it seems mm-hmm. that liberals and conservatives agree on the question of oppressing Afghanis.
Yeah.
Even though here in North America, they might have a difference of opinion on treatment of women. But when it comes to Muslim and the Muslim world and foreign policy, they all seem to agree.
Yes.
That's unanimity. There is no difference in opinion.
Well, we're going to be hearing, I guess, Mr. Ignatieff and others talking about staying. Harper shouldn't leave Afghanistan. The job isn't finished. By the way, what job? I don't understand it. We're living in a land of myths and legend. They keep talking about a war. Every Canadian that I read about who's killed there so far ran over a landmine. That's not a war. That's occupation. As you're going up and down a road, you're not engaging another army. They went to them and the Americans all went to that place that was supposed to be a stronghold of the
Mirage,
whatever it was, the Taliban. And they didn't. There wasn't hardly a firefight there. And it wasn't a city anyway. I mean, just we're as badly as informed as anybody in the 19th century was about what happened in when the British were over there deciding they were going to run Afghanistan.
And then, of course, Obama went there the other night, right, to lecture Karzai about, you know, get rid of corruption, even though they're...
But he was showing the flag.
Yeah.
That was for, by the way, Obama is talking to his own. He's saying, you see, right-wing America, why are you getting mad at me about the medical thing? I'm over here ready to kill foreigners and reminding the world that we're number one. And, of course, yes, we always know that foreigners are led by corrupt people. We would know. We appointed them.
Yeah.
What could be more corrupt than them establishing Karzai as the leader of the country? Is what they did. So why do they talk about him being corrupt? You know, it's like a...
Well, if he's corrupt, who's paying him? And the people paying him, or the paymaster is the states.
They put him there.
Yeah.
So what's the rule? Don't steal too much? But it's a way to show, you know, we're there and we're still sorting it out because they're backward.
Well, Obama did that.
What's wrong with our mentality?
And then the G8, he's saying the number one issue is going to be Iran. So,
And allegedly it has something to do with nuclear weapons. And Ralph Nader, bless his heart, stood up at the anti-war rally in Washington, D.C. and said Israel has at least 200 nuclear weapons, and they don't belong to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. So we must be out of our minds. We're looking at the wrong place. What? Iran is a signatory. Iran is complying. They allow visits. But Israel doesn't do any of that, and they all kind of think it's a joke. They all laugh behind their hand when someone says, do you have nuclear weapons?
Well, we can. I watched the video of a press conference of Angela Merkel and the Prime Minister of Turkey, Erdip, and in it, Merkel says, "We hope Turkey, you know, supports our stand on sanctions in Iran." And the Prime Minister of Turkey says, "I don't understand. There is one country that has 200 nuclear weapons, and you don't want to put any sanctions on them, but you want to put sanctions on a country that doesn't have any nuclear weapons." Mm-hmm. Explain that one to me. And this was, I mean, it was right. They were standing in the same room, both of them talking to the press. It didn't get covered much in Canada, but it was covered in Europe, and it was sure was covered in the Middle East and Turkey.
No, we are not allowed to discuss that in Canada. That's not on our agenda.
And then one final thing, because we're running out of time. America is now boasting that it kidnapped or got an Iranian dissident that worked in a nuclear industry to come over and that they're debriefing them. The Iranians are claiming that they were he was kidnapped. But it is interesting that about 15 years ago, a guy called Vanunu blew the whistle on the Israeli nuclear secrets and pointed out that there was 200 bombs. He was kidnapped out of Europe and put in jail and not allowed to talk to anybody for 15 years. And nothing was raised about it in the West.
No, it's to this day, actually. Mr. Vanunu is not exactly a household name.
Yes. So I guess what's...
So the name of our interview is How We Are Ruled.
Yes. Anyways, Phil, we have to go.
All right.
I want to just remind our listeners, don't forget Ishmael Reed. On April 16th at 25 Cecil Street in Toronto at 7:30 or 7 o'clock. So thanks a lot, Phil. And if people want to listen to Phil at CIUT at 89.5 on Mondays at 5. And tune in next week to 89.5 Unusual Sources, Brendan Stone with Peter Leibovich. And next week we have Taxi Talk for half an hour.